to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. As always, I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith. Very excited to talk to you about a fun episode of NXT this week. Last week, not the most fun episode that I have ever watched. This week, very fun episode, very fun main event. We get some answers. We're excited. The episode is late this week as kind of adjusting to the new job and working odd hours. And so this one's coming out today, and we'll be back to the regular schedule coming this next week. Now, before I get started, you can always find me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. If you have any questions you want to hear on the show or any topics you want to hear me cover, a lot of times the news and notes come from that Twitter, so go check it out over there. Also, in addition to this podcast, I am the host of Random Wrestling, a new podcast that I started with Matt's help here, where I assign a number to every pay-per-view on the network. I have a random number generator, and whatever pops up, I have to talk about that pay-per-view. The Hell in a Cell 2019 episode is already up. I've said before, one of the worst made events that I have ever had to sit through. I try and fix it a bit. So if you search Random Wrestling, wherever you're listening to this podcast, it'll be there as well. So check me out over there. Now, as you know, we talk about the news and the notes to start us off. And boy, do we have some fun stuff to talk about. Edge has presumably, or has appeared to, make his choice for his WrestleMania opponent after winning the Royal Rumble. Predictably, he is going to be going after Roman Reigns. This is the best of the stories that they could have told. The NXT title, it would have been odd to have Edge on NXT. There was not necessarily a story with Drew McIntyre, and they weren't going to turn either of them into bad guys. Roman Reigns is the guy that just kind of fits. And it's one of those matches where I think that Roman is going to win, and I think that Roman should win, but in my heart of hearts, I love Edge very much, and if he wins, I'm going to be honest with you, I'll be fine with it. And a lot of people talk about how Edge is a, you know, part-timer and an older guy, and if he were to win the title, it would be hypocritical to like it versus, say, a Goldberg. I would argue that the difference there is that Edge now and at any point in his career was like an actual professional wrestler and not a meathead who cannot wrestle. And Edge can like do a promo, and Edge can like be a nice chill guy. A lot of it does have to do with, you know, just not liking Goldberg as a wrestler and him not being a particularly interesting person. I'm not so concerned with a part-timer holding the title, but I will point out that before Edge got injured, he was on Raw just about every week. And since winning the Royal Rumble this year, he has been on NXT. He's been on multiple episodes of Raw and multiple episodes of SmackDown. He had a match on Raw just a few weeks ago with Randy Orton. He's a pretty friggin' active competitor for a part-timer. And I can put him in a match with Roman Reigns and trust that it will be a great match, whereas if I put Goldberg in there, I'm putting all the impetus on Roman Reigns to carry Goldberg through a match that I know that I'm not going to be interested in anyway. Also, Goldberg's not going to be able to cut a coherent or interesting promo about Roman Reigns, which means Roman and Paul Heyman would have to do the entire build by themselves while Goldberg squints at them and swears to you that he is intimidating. So, if Edge were to win, I don't think that we would have a part-time champion, and I don't think it would be a long title reign. But the way Roman Reigns is going right now, I don't think it's time to take the title off of him yet. So that's going to be a very intriguing match. And one of the reasons that Edge did not pick Drew McIntyre is because Drew McIntyre is no longer your WWE champion. He successfully defended the title in the Elimination Chamber. That was a really good match. But then after, during his celebration, he was attacked by Bobby Lashley, and then The Miz cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase and became a two-time WWE champion, about 10 years apart. He's also the first two-time Grand Slam winner in WWE history, meaning he's won a world title, an intercontinental title, a tag title. He's won all of the titles. He's never been Universal Champion. I think that's the only one he has not held. And obviously the 24/7 title, but whatever. So the early reaction to The Miz winning the title was The Miz has been booked as a joke, and this is ridiculous. What are we doing? And I've had some time to reflect on it. And boy, oh boy, I love it. Love it for a few reasons. Always been a big fan of The Miz. Came in as a reality show star who wanted to be a wrestler. Nobody, no fans, none of the people in the back thought that he would be able to make it. He often tells the story about being kicked out of the locker room. He has to keep that vague because I believe the details are that he was eating chicken and crumbs got into or onto the bag of another wrestler and he was kicked out. The reason that's a problem is because that wrestler was Chris Benoit. So they allow him to say that he was not allowed in the locker room, but for obvious reasons, we're not allowed to say why. So he was essentially changing in a closet. He stuck with it. And he was given the WWE title. And then he was put in a program with John Cena. They had a terrible main event at WrestleMania, but I would argue that that main event was terrible because it was an afterthought and was just a setup for John Cena versus The Rock. And so it didn't really matter to WWE. WWE wants to tell you a story. They're not interested in having like a good match. They will have a good story before they have a good match. If you listen to Something to Wrestle With, often when Conrad will talk to Bruce Pritchard about this match not living up to expectations, Bruce Pritchard often will not take that seriously, and he will say it was fine, it was telling a story. Not every match has to be a five-star Tokyo Dome classic taking sideswipes at Dave Meltzer. And while I agree with part of that sentiment, that not every match has to be a Matt classic, you can tell good stories while having good wrestling matches. And The Miz's title reign, which I actually liked the first time, was kind of dampened by that terrible main event that I don't think had a lot to do with him. And now The Miz is your WWE champion. And is he taken seriously? Absolutely not. Is he intimidating? Absolutely not. Do you think that he's going to be champion for any length of time? Absolutely not. But here's the thing. I think that's the point. I think that we're going to get The Miz and Bobby Lashley for the title next week. I don't think The Miz is going to have this title for very long. I don't think that he's going to lose it next week. I think Drew's going to interfere in that match and be a little bit upset at Bobby, because if I were Drew, I'd be more upset at Bobby Lashley than The Miz. And then at some point, I think The Miz is going to lose that title to Bobby Lashley. And then we get a few things. We get Bobby Lashley as the WWE champion, something that I was a big Bobby Lashley fan the first time he was in the company, and I'm a big fan of him now, and it would just blow my mind to see him as WWE champion, because it's a thing that I always thought could happen when he faced John Cena in his first run and wasn't able to beat him, and it's a thing that I think would be excellent. He is intimidating as hell. He's got MVP for his manager and to do promos like a Paul Heyman to a Brock Lesnar. And also, it would give us the WrestleMania match of Drew McIntyre versus Bobby Lashley. They went at it, was it Backlash where he faced Bobby Lashley? I think it was. For the WWE title, and Lashley lost, but now Bobby Lashley can absolutely beat The Miz and take that title. And then it can be Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre, one, for the WWE Championship, and two, for Drew to avenge Bobby Lashley costing him the title. So, The Miz being WWE Champion is important to me. Might not be important to you, but I think that's the point. So like I said, we have a great episode of NXT. It opens with Scarlett playing with cards, and she's very... she's talking spooky, and it's a lot to send the point that Cross is taking on Santos Escobar tonight. I think this is actually going to be a good match. I wrote that early. Spoiler alert, yes it is. I'm not sure why it's Santos Escobar facing him, but I like it. Escobar never really ran from Karrion Kross. He's clearly intimidated by him, and he walked away from him, but he's never looked outright terrified. I like that. We open the show proper with Dexter Lumis. I saw a comment, I think on a YouTube video, wondering what the crowd reaction would be for Dexter Lumis if there were live crowds. That's a good question. I feel like there wouldn't be a lot because Lumis feels kind of aimless. I really liked the character initially, but I don't know. It just kind of feels like we had a cool initial idea and now we don't really know what to do with him. The way or the Gargano family are backstage, they put their hands in and they say, "That's the way. We like it." Austin Theory says that should be a song. Dumb Austin Theory is so great. So Johnny's out with the Gargano family. I'm not calling them the way because my name is better. Everyone but Austin Theory is intimidated by Dexter Lumis because Austin Theory is a very good wrestler who is also kind of dumb. That is his character. This will eventually fade when and if Austin Theory breaks off from this group and takes on presumably Johnny again. But for now, I think this character works. He's not a serious character right now, but you can take what this is and make him one. And I think that's kind of the point. So Dexter Lumis disappears, and Indy Wrestling and the whole family start looking around and under the ring. Johnny is by the ropes. He said, "He's right behind me, isn't he?" And in fact, he was. Austin Theory, when Dexter Lumis is outside the ring, goes to hit him, and Lumis turns around in time, and Austin just says, "Hey, what's up?" Indy Wrestling goes to do it too, and Lumis stares at her, and a weird thing happens, because Indy clearly is cool with that, and then makes the sign and mouths, "Call me." I'm trying to decide if Dexter Lumis would have a phone. Like, I don't know what he would need it for. He just kind of kidnaps people and generally is crazy. I picture Dexter Lumis sleeping in the Capitol Wrestling Center, like in the rafters or something. So I don't... No, no, he doesn't have a phone. He definitely doesn't. If... And so, like, it's weird she has a crush on him. But, you know... do you? And then Candace gets up on the apron and she's trying to do a Hurricane Rana from the apron on Dexter, but Dexter catches her and she's like in powerbomb position. And for a split second, I thought that Candace LeRae was going to get powerbombed on that apron, because if any woman in this company would be powerbombed by a dude, Candace would be the one. She used to do intergender matches a lot. She's a badass. I thought they were doing it for a second there. And I was simultaneously excited and nervous. So, inside the ring again, Johnny has Candace distract the referee. He has Theory go grab a chair for him before he can do anything with it. Dexter Lumis steps on that chair and hits him, so that plan didn't quite get there. Indy is still staring at Dexter Lumis like she now has a crush on him. Johnny is thrown into that chair that Austin Theory is still holding, and he puts him into the, I think they call it the silence, that chokehold he does, and Johnny passes out. The family are arguing outside about whose fault that was as Lumis stares him down. Indy is still distracted, just staring at Lumis, because it's an odd way to do that. We cut away to William Regal walking outside. He turns to the cameraman and tells the producers that when Santos Escobar gets here, to please alert him. The thing goes, if Escobar does not show tonight, he will be stripped of the Cruiserweight title. Now, this match with Karrion Kross, if it does happen, is non-title, but Santos Escobar has to have the match to keep the title. We go from that to a vignette for MSK, and they're going to be doing an interview. And before they can do anything, they are immediately attacked by the Grizzled Young Veterans, who are still mad about losing to MSK in the finals of the tournament. MSK is a very happy-go-lucky group thus far, just kind of happy to be there. But now they're like in a legit feud, like somebody like legit attacked them. And so I think that's going to be good for them, because up till now, MSK has been a group that is very good at wrestling, and they are very happy to be here, and they're very excited they won a tournament. Now, that's a good way to debut and get the audience familiar with the moveset and personalities of a team. That's all good. The problem is that if you're just happy-go-lucky, happy to be there all the time, there's nothing really there. And it's not a mistake that NXT has made. It's just the way that the story has gone. We haven't really seen layers to them. So next week is going to tell us a lot about MSK and how they respond to this. If they're still their happy-go-lucky selves after being attacked, they'll be a lot less interesting. Because that's a kind of a one-note character, and that's one-note characters aren't interesting. If somebody attacks you and tries to injure you, you should be angry, and you should have kind of more of an edge to you. So next week, hopefully, we get MSK with more of an edge and them being angry, because that's what I would like to see from them after being attacked, and I think, or I hope, that that was part of the point. As my dog, I guess my dog didn't like that point, because now my 8-pound poodle is biting me in the hand. And he does this every once in a while, and he thinks he's a little lion. And again, I can't stress enough, he's an 8-pound poodle and he's not a lion. All I do is love you and feed you and give you toys, and you attack your own father. You're trying to eat him while he does his podcast. It's not cool. Listen, was that important? No, but am I going to edit it? No, also. So, if MSK has like more of an edge to them, I think that would help them a lot. Regal is backstage in the Performance Center. He's offering a non-title match with Io Shirai to Zoe Stark, I believe is her name. Apologies, I don't know who Zoe Stark is. I presume it's a new signee to NXT. I would also presume that she's done work elsewhere, as most people that they sign have. But a match with Io Shirai is a great way to debut and prove yourself, because if you can have a good match, if you can't have a good match with Io Shirai, something might be wrong. Io Shirai is a little bit like the Bret Hart of the women's division right now, where she can have a good match with just about anybody, and if she can't, that's a problem. This match went longer than I thought, and it was very good. Io is finally able to hit the moonsault and beat Zoe Stark. So, okay. Zoe Stark is now on the map. Io is very good at beating you, but making it look like she could have been beaten if one or two things went differently. Io offers her a hand, and they hug. And as they are doing so, Tony Storm's music hits. Tony said, "It's interesting that you are willing to fight anybody in this division but me. I'm Tony Storm, and last week I kicked your head off and you did nothing about it. There's a reason you pinned Mercedes Martinez at TakeOver and not me, and it's because you can't beat me." Io rolls the hell out of her eyes, and that's the first time I've seen her do that. That was great. Io says, "I will fight you anytime, any place, anywhere." Tony is, at this point, basically manipulating Io to go find William Regal and put a title match for just the two of them. Io says, "You're on." Io is always down to fight anyone 100% of the time. It's always weird, though, when the champion is making the matches with the challengers, but I like the way that Tony has set everything up, because everything that she's done has been to manipulate Io into getting a one-on-one title shot, and she got it. And I think that's in a couple weeks we'll get that match. So we get a little vignette. Next week it's going to be Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax, my least favorite wrestler, defending their women's tag titles against Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. Shayna said that the women's division is nothing but the scraps from when she left. That was a great line. I'm going to be honest. Nia might have talked. I don't know, because as soon as Shayna was done talking, I skipped it so I wouldn't have to hear it. So we have a split screen where Karrion Kross's entrance is starting, and there's a split screen with Legado del Fantasma about to open the doors to their SUV for Santos Escobar. It turns out Karrion Kross is in fact not making his entrance because he breaks off to attack the members outside. And he takes out both of the members standing by the car, and then Santos gets out of the car and attacks him. So he kind of gets the upper hand there. This isn't the most high-profile match that Karrion Kross has ever had, but Santos Escobar is one of the best wrestlers that Kross has gone across, and these are the kind of matches that Karrion Kross needs to have. He's selling for Santos Escobar as Escobar gets the upper hand underhandedly. This is good. Legado gangs up on Kross, and they bring him inside the building, and they bring him like behind the ring apron. This is a good match so far. This was a good way to do this. Santos Escobar wouldn't be able to do this by himself, but with all three of them, they can kind of get heat on Kross and make a better match, because it's not interesting if Karrion Kross just throws these dudes around for 10 minutes. That wouldn't be interesting at all. So it's an interesting way to kind of do this. Santos starts walking to the ring, and then Karrion Kross takes the two backups and he throws them over the apron and through the chain link fence around the ring, and then just stares at Santos Escobar. This is interesting because Escobar still doesn't look scared. He looks intimidated. Now, looking scared is fine if you're a bad guy, but I like that Escobar is just intimidated, but he's still a proud guy, and he thinks so highly of himself that he either can't be totally scared, or at least he can't show it, and he's very good at hiding it. So this is a street fight, and you can tell it's a street fight, not because they're using weapons, but because both guys are wearing long pants and not wrestling gear. That is wrestling for this is a street fight. So that's always how you can tell. If it's jeans, it's a street fight. If long pants, also a street fight. I would have to go back and look to make sure, but I'm pretty sure this is my favorite Karrion Kross match. I feel comfortable saying that. He could have had a better match with Tommaso Ciampa, but that wasn't the story they were telling. But I think that's part of the reason that the match with Ciampa was much less interesting, because the point of that match was that nothing that Ciampa did could really phase Karrion Kross, and Karrion Kross just beat the absolute hell out of Ciampa and put Ciampa on the shelf for a while. So the story that they were telling is that Kross is kind of an unstoppable monster. And I understand why that match was done that way, and I don't necessarily disagree with the thinking there, but I will say that I think that this match, at first, is a much more enjoyable match to watch, but also, I think it's a better story. I think that taking on a person who, in Santos Escobar, is not as strong as you, but Santos Escobar has his two friends with him, and this is a street fight, and you have no backup because you just attack people, and so Legado can get the upper hand on you, but then there are still those moments where, like, you throw two men through the chain link, and so you still look like a monster, and you have to fight from underneath a little bit, which you can still do as a monster. I personally, and I think you would agree, is a better story than what can Ciampa do to stop this monster? Oh, nothing. He can't do anything. So to me, these are the kinds of stories that I really like, and I just think that if Kross keeps having matches like this, I think he's going to get over a lot better than if he just has squash matches. He's a monster, and he has great feats of power, but he is selling a lot, and that just makes for a better match. So this actually helps Santos Escobar a lot, too. Santos is not going to win, but he looks more legit being able to hang with Kross, even though he has a lot of help. Santos Escobar was fantastic in Lucha Underground. He's fantastic here, but he hasn't had a lot to sink his teeth into. The cruiserweight title is always going to be an afterthought. It was more a thing created for a tournament than a thing to be taken seriously going forward. And I think that's shown out now. I think that cruiserweights and cruiserweight titles worked in the days of WCW, you know, having Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash in the main event, and you'd have Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero, you know, in the undercard, putting on the best in-ring matches. Now, I think the problem is that the cruiserweight style is the WWE style to a large degree. The cruiserweight style now doesn't look different than the main roster style. And that's not good for the cruiserweights, nor is it good for the main roster members, because now everything feels the same and you're taking more risk for less reward. So it's never going to be important, but I don't know how we got Santos Escobar in this feud, but him not being scared of Cross, being intimidated, but wanting to do this match on his own terms and ducking him, but then when it comes time to fight, he fights, shows a different side to Santos Escobar too. That bad guy thing of, I'm the best, nobody can touch me, is a good line to put in a promo, but it's much more effective if it's put in action and you see it in a ring. Like, yes, you're a monster, you're big, but I have friends and I am Santos Escobar. I'm not backing down from you. I like it. Karrion Kross is very good at suplexes, and as a fun fact, my notes app frankly insists that the word suplexes, in fact, I meant to write duplexes, and Kross isn't even in real estate, so that's ridiculous. I had to type that word like 4 times before it would let me say suplexes, which apparently isn't a word at all. Karrion Kross does a back suplex and put Santos Escobar through one of the announce tables. There's no way you can do that move and it doesn't just hurt like a son of a word I can't say on this podcast. They're back in the ring. Karrion Kross hits the forearm to the back of the head and he wins the match. This was a fantastic match. This is my favorite match tonight. This is my favorite match in a while, and it's by far my favorite match from either of these guys. Kross winning is the right move, but I think this helped both guys a lot. So Adam Cole is shown backstage walking to the ring. We may be getting some answers tonight from Mr. Cole. LA Knight is making a video in his car like a dork. Says people are wondering when he's going to, you know, do something. Since when I debut, it's going to be my way on my terms. So it could be the next week, it could be in 3 weeks, it could be in 3 months. Somebody has a golden ticket to be made famous by LA Knight. Blah, 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 blah. All right, man, whatever. See you when you show up. LA Knight's still a bad name. I understand why Eli Drake wouldn't want to use his real name. But LA Knight's an annoying name. He is a bad guy, so I guess it's a good thing that he's annoying. But at this point, he's not annoying. He's boring me. Because he's not like he's shooting videos from his car like it matters, but he's not talking about anybody specifically. Those promos where you just kind of broadcast that you're looking for the smoke, but don't say anybody specifically, do nothing for me. Because it means nothing. It just means that they don't have a plan for you yet, and so you're just going to say, oh, I'm great. This is going to be done on my terms, and whoever wants it, blah, 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 make you famous. It just doesn't mean anything, and I know it's not going to matter once he goes into an actual feud, and when he has somebody to focus on, he can cut good promos, and he can have good matches. But until then, I'm just not interested in watching a dude with a bad name talk in his car like a dork about nothing. And I'm not even mad about it. I think he's going to be good in NXT, but there's just nothing going right now with it. So I guess we'll see you whenever, dude. Adam Cole is out. Cole as a bad guy is so much better than Cole as a good guy. Adam Cole is a lot like Kevin Owens. He's a natural bad guy. They can both be good guys. Kevin Owens is one right now. But they're just natural bad guys, and they are their most entertaining when they are. We watched the attack from last week, and Cole says that I had every intention of coming out and explaining why I did what I did to Kyle, but after watching that footage, I feel sick to my stomach. He said the NXT title is very important to me, but I don't like the guy that I have become the last few weeks. He said, at first I was pissed that Kyle kept getting opportunities and kept failing. That's true. He said, but it doesn't excuse my actions. He says, after watching that footage, I am ashamed of myself. He turns to the camera. He says, Kyle, you're sitting at home right now. I wish so badly that we could be having this conversation face to face, but we can't, and we can't because of me. He said, Kyle, you know me better than anybody. I'm telling you now, I was dead wrong. You should be in this ring. Instead, I made a stupid mistake, and I hate myself for it. He said, I am so sorry, and I'm going to do everything in my power to fix this. If I can't, I'm going to try. This is the point at which I was like, wait, what are we doing? Because that was not the promo I was expecting. I was expecting, throughout this whole promo, when he's saying, and I regret it and I hate myself, I thought we were heading for I regret that I didn't do it sooner. I kept thinking he was going to do it, because I'm programmed to think of promos in terms of like a swerve at the end, but he didn't this whole time, and I was confused. But Roderick Strong comes out. He says, wow, now you feel bad. For the past 10 days, you didn't feel bad for not telling me what was going on and what you did to us. He says, everything's changed now. This whole thing, the Undisputed Era, kind of pulls on his Undisputed Era dog tag. He said, this whole thing was built on trust and love and brotherhood. He said, understand this. Kyle is going to heal. And you know Kyle. When he does, I don't know if I can save you from what he's going to do to you. Before we can go any further, Finn comes out with his music. He pushes Roderick Strong aside and then gets in the ring and attacks Adam Cole. Strong waits just a second. He takes off his jacket a little bit slow, and then he gets in to help. Finn takes him out, but they gang up on him and kind of take him out. So Cole gets back in the ring and he's saying sorry to Roddy, and Roddy hits him in the face, but he's conflicted and Cole keeps apologizing. So Cole ends up kind of on his knees with his head in his hands, and they seem to make up because Roderick Strong kind of gets on his level. He says, you know, it's okay, you're my brother, I love you. And they're both kind of just having this emotional moment, and they hug it out, and obviously Adam Cole low blows Roderick Strong. I was wondering what we were doing here. I was confused about what was going to happen. So Cole says, you are so stupid, Roddy. He rips the Undisputed Era tag off of Roddy's neck and super kicks him. So we got a little bit of answers. I think that if Kyle O'Reilly had been here, he would have done the same thing to Kyle O'Reilly, but I think that Roderick Strong just happened to be there. So I think next week we'll kind of get more answers. But like I said, this was a very good episode of NXT. That Karrion Kross Santos Escobar main event really did it for me. And I love the stuff with Undisputed Era. I love what they're doing with The Way right now. I'm interested to see if Indy's going to continue this crush on Dexter Lumis. I don't know what's going on, neither do you. You can always hit me up once again on Twitter at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. Please do me a favor, whatever podcast you are, or app rather, you're listening to this on, do me a favor, search Random Wrestling. Picture of a ring, RW in red letters. That's me. The Hell in a Cell 2019 episode is up. You can give that a listen. If you like it, maybe subscribe, maybe rate it. That'll be coming out soon as well. You can check me out over on Random Wrestling or on Twitter, but in the meantime, that's it for NXT, which means that's it for me. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic, and thank you for listening.